Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone from the literary world. My guest today is Mark A. Curtis. He has just released an absolutely fabulous book, and one that I thoroughly enjoyed, Dominance and Delusion. Good afternoon, Mark, and welcome to the show.
Good afternoon.
Maybe we could start with a little background. Who is Mark A. Curtis?
Mark Curtis is a retired engineer with a strong interest in anthropology. When I was thinking about what I was going to do as a career, I looked at anthropology and as engineering. And I came to the conclusion that anthropologists didn't make enough money. So I chose engineering, but I have always had a strong interest in anthropology. And that's really was the basis for this manuscript. This is over 30 years of research and development, as well as interviews, and the bibliography of the book runs to 350, 360 volumes, in addition to a lot of internet information and articles, newspaper and magazine articles. So it's a lifetime of work. This is actually my fifth manuscript, but it is the first one that I feel has enough merit to warrant being published.
It's interesting. I mean, somehow I see engineering and anthropology as two very, very different mindsets.
Well, one of the things that my engineering has taught me is to be very skeptical. And with engineering, you have to check and double check and triple check and make sure that the calculations that you are making and that the outlines that you are trying to determine are both correct and accurate. And this is really the key to Dominance and Delusion. I have adopted a total skeptical attitude with respect to much of human behavior, looking at it as objectively as I can from an engineering standpoint.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you had written five manuscripts, but Dominance and Delusion is your first foray into the book world?
It's the first one that I felt had enough merit that it should be published.
What made you decide to write it?
Well, it was there. That's the easiest way to explain it. I saw what I felt was a issue that needed to be addressed, and the company that I worked for during my career was a company that was owned and run by Seventh-day Adventists, and they are creationists. And in talking to these people, I came to the conclusion that they actually, truly, honestly, legitimately believe that the Earth is only 10,000 years old and was created from nothing. And I found this fascinating because I had been raised on dinosaurs and trilobites, and I knew better. And that's what really started it. And I started looking around for other delusions that we suffer from, and astrology comes to mind. We believe in ESP, we believe in witches, we believe in ghosts, we believe in haunted houses, and the list goes on and on and on. And so that was really where it began. And then I started looking for other behavioral patterns that I felt might define the human animal. And I very quickly came to the conclusion that dominance was a common characteristic of the human animal. We are social primates. All social primates form dominant systems. We form dominant systems. And that was really the basis for the manuscript, it has proven beneficial in the respect that much of what is in the book applies to today. It is not something that is arcane or limited. In the final chapters of the book, I outline what I perceive as the appropriate action that the human animal should take with respect to the future.
Right. I mean, you know, we've all watched those glorious Animal Planet shows about primates, and you know, there's an alpha male and an alpha female. Indeed, the human race is exactly like that. There are alphas, and there are the rest.
There's alphas, and there's betas, and there's gammas, and there's deltas, all the way down to the omega man. So there's,
right.
I mean, there's a whole range of behavior in the human animal, and that's one of the points that I make, is that we cannot all be shoveled into the same bin. We have to be judged or be examined individually in order to really get any kind of a handle on human behavior.
Yeah, I do agree with you. There are lots of ways of categorizing it, and you know, you were talking about alphas all the way down to omega. I view it in a more simple fashion. There are sheep, and there are shepherds.
Okay.
I thought it was an absolutely great read, and as I recall in my review, I referred to it as 300 pages of glorious rant. I mean, what's your comment on me saying that?
Well, I do not consider it a rant. What I consider it is objective, unbiased, and honest statements with regard to the human animal. One of the points that I make is that as human beings, we are totally incapable of objectively looking at our own behavior and drawing conclusions from it. We are biased.
Oh, we certainly are. I mean, we can look at a family of meerkats or a pride of lions and draw all sorts of conclusions about the pecking order and who does what to who and why, and yet we seem to be absolutely in the dark when we talk about ourselves.
Yes, very, very true. And we tend to ignore that which does not fit into our preconception of ourselves, and to belittle those aspects of human behavior that we find repugnant. And one of the things that I see is there's a guy by the name of Keith Abloh. He's a doctor of some kind, and he's one of the talking heads on one of the news programs. And his statement is, his basic rationale is that every child is born with what he calls a load of empathy, and that in some children that empathy is squeezed out of them, and that's why they behave badly. And I absolutely disagree. I think there are individuals who are born bad, and there's no way around it.
It's interesting. I read a very similar book a couple of weeks ago, and the author contended that everyone was born loving, caring, blah, blah, you know. and it's the parents that are the root of all evil.
The culture.
The culture, yes, indeed.
Yes, there is, and this goes back 50, 60, 70 years ago, and I write about it in the book, to the great nurture-nature war. And there was a segment of human studies that said that everything was nurture. If we were nurtured correctly, we would be nice, upstanding, fine citizens. And there was another school that said that we are influenced by nature, that our evolutionary background has placed certain genetic components within our behavior patterns that influence our behavior patterns. And the nurturists have won. And that is generally what is taught today in the schools, that if we are just nice to each other, then everything will be fine and we'll get along very well and there will be peace on earth, goodwill towards man. And
right.
I don't believe it.
No, I've got to admit, I'm not sure I buy into that. I read yet another book a couple of months ago, and it was a pretty serious look at DNA, and there's more to DNA than meets the eye. You know, we may have supposedly decoded it, and yet we haven't. You know, we haven't even scratched the surface.
Yes, I agree. I think in the next 10 years you will see a positive explosion of DNA explanations that will light up a lot of what is today kind of murky ground in human behavior.
Right. I mean, at the moment, the emphasis seems to be on finding genetic problems, you know, and reasons why people are more susceptible to one disease or another. I personally believe that you're right, and what we're going to be seeing is that the DNA does actually give an indication of people's predisposition to their actions, their thoughts, their behavior.
I agree.
Okay, I have to say that virtually everything you wrote, I agree with, and that doesn't happen very often. Now, I mean, this business about the Earth being created 10,000 years ago, in my mind anyway, is absolute bull. I mean, what are these people thinking of?
Well, one of the things that it does, this aspect of goes into our genetic past, our evolutionary past, it makes us important. If you look at religion, one of the things that religion does is makes us special. Just the Christian religion, for instance, we, according to the Bible, are made in the image of God. Well, we may not be gods, we may not be able to do godlike things, but at least we look like gods. That's how important we are. Another aspect of it is the fact that the gods fight over us. We have two gods that are actually scheming and plotting and planning and fighting over us. That makes us important. Either that or the gods are crazy, one of the two. So one of the things that religion does is makes us special. And this is part of the appeal of religion. And I don't really have a problem with that. I don't really care if people feel that way. The problem that I have is when individuals take advantage of our religious delusion to promote their dominance agendas. That's really where the problem arises. Whether you're talking Jim Jones or David Koresh or even the Pope, you have the same situation. Individuals in search of dominance who are taking advantage of a person's delusions.
Right, and once again, I absolutely agree with you.
Well, this is what's important about it. I mean, this is really the important aspect of it. We need to understand, if we are religious people, we need to understand that there are individuals who take advantage of our religious predispositions. That's what's important.
Right. I read a... it's a very famous quote, although... Who originally said it is long lost in history. If God doesn't exist, man would have needed to invent him.
Yes. And I think that's exactly the case. I think we have invented him. And again, it goes back to, at one time in our evolutionary history, to feel that one was special, that one was unique, that one was different, that one was important, actually had a great deal of survival value. That people, when they were contesting with each other, if a person felt that the gods were on his side, it gave him just maybe the amount of confidence that he needed in order to overcome an equally strong, equally prepared opponent.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I know myself. You know, I've faced situations of adversity, not usually physical. I'm not much of a fighter, but I mean, you know, you're backed into a corner. What are you going to do? If you don't have confidence, you're not going to overcome the issue that you're trying to deal with.
Right. Many times. I mean, that's not an absolute, but it does confer a distinct advantage to the individual.
Oh, absolutely. Now, going back to this 10,000-year nonsense, there are scientists that are buying into this. I mean, how can they possibly be geologists or anthropologists and still buy into the story?
Right. Well, one of the incidents that I use in the book is James Irwin, and this guy was an astronaut. This guy walked on the moon. This guy had a master's degree in engineering from the University of Michigan. So he was no dummy, but yet he totally accepted the premise that the Earth was less than 10,000 years old, and that Noah had landed an ark on Mount Ararat, and he actually went to Mount Ararat in search of Noah's ark.
And he fell over, didn't he, or something?
But it tells us something. It tells us that the human animal has the ability to believe delusional concepts with a total and complete certainty. And my contention is that anyone who believes with that degree of certainty can't do it from a purely mental aspect. They have to be genetically predisposed to believe that kind of nonsense. There is a genetic component to our belief in delusion.
Right. One of the things I came away with after reading the book, and I love the title, you know, Dominance and Delusion. I mean, they're not opposites, not by any definition, but it is interesting. You know, we want to dominate, yet we want to be delusional at the same time. I love the...
Go ahead.
Sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead.
No.
You have to understand that what we are talking about is a situation where individuals, and it doesn't apply equally to everybody, but where individuals are so strongly genetically motivated that they can do these things and believe these things and actually behave in ways that demonstrate that they believe these things. This is what really amazes me. I am a skeptic. Again, I'm also an engineer. I have to look at everything objectively and without bias and without any kind of preconception. And to find people swallowing whole what is absolute gibberish is, to me, the most fascinating aspect of human behavior that I have run across. On the other hand, over half the people in the United States believe that creationism is a viable alternative to how we got here. So it's not something that is, you know, only impacts a minority of the people in the United States. It's most of the people in the United States, well, I won't say most, but over half of the people in the United States believe that creationism is a viable explanation of our origins.
Yes, that, and I have to admit that that bothers me. I'm not an engineer. I'm not a scientist, but I'm a free thinking individual, and I'm sorry. I just can't buy into this one. there's too many other aspects that just make the whole creation theory impractical. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Well, one of the most interesting facts that you can quote, and you can quote me on this, it's not in the book, but if we did indeed suffer a flood, and in order to cover Mount Ephraim, that flood would have to be 29,000 feet deep, and if it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, then it had to rain 6 inches per minute in order to flood the earth to a depth of 29,000 feet in 40 days and 40 nights.
Good Lord.
6 inches
I
per
live...
minute, you couldn't breathe in water falling at 6 inches per minute.
Right. I mean, I live in Mississippi, and we get some bad rainfall, but you know, it's certainly not 6 inches a minute. we'd be in real big trouble.
Yes. The Ark would not have been able to float in 6 inches per minute because it would not have been able to support that volume of water. It would have sunk.
Right. I love your concept behind the book. I think on the back cover you refer to it as a book of whys.
Yes.
And you certainly ask many interesting questions. We've been talking about creationism, but is there another favorite why of yours?
Well, my, and it's relevant to today. Is that in order for the human species to exist in the numbers that they exist in, the only viable economic model is capitalism. And it goes right back to our evolutionary dominance-oriented past. So these when people talk of socialism and communism and Marxism, they will not pass muster as a economic concept because of human behavior. And that's why they have not worked in the past. That's why Russia did not succeed in founding a communist country. It's why China has gone to capitalism it's really kind of interesting because China is economically capitalist and politically communist. And yet the whole communist concept is the withering away of the state. So you wouldn't have a state. So it is really kind of an interesting component to economic systems, and we do not take into consideration the possibility that Marxism will not work because of human behavior.
Right. What kind of reaction are you getting from readers? I'd guess it's pretty much black or white.
It is even worse than that. When I finished the book a little over a year ago, I finished the book and I wanted a gal that was recommended to me to edit it, and she edited the introduction and sent the book back and said that she would not edit the rest of the book. And it turned out that I had stepped on some very sensitive toes with respect aspects of human behavior. About a month ago, I was invited to appear on the Pat McMahon show, and it's a local TV show. And after Pat McMahon read the book, they disinvited me from appearing on the show. So this is the kind of response that the book is generating.
Just out of curiosity, and I think I probably know the answer to this one. Did you try the traditional publishing route before you went to print on demand?
Yes, I did. I started actually with agents, and I sent a synopsis of the manuscript to a number of agents, and I did not get anywhere. So then I sent the synopsis to a number of publishers. I got one positive response. Prometheus Books wanted to see the manuscript, but they also wanted the opinions of two anthropologists. And for the life of me, I could not get an anthropologist to give me an opinion of the book. So that led me to self-publishing.
Right. That's curious. I know a little bit about Prometheus, and they usually will take on projects that are non-mainstream. Odd one.
Yes. And I found out, I've talked to a number of anthropologists, and they've told me, look, one guy told me from University Tucson, said that chances are 99 times out of 100, it's claptrap. It's, you know, if you're not an anthropologist, you don't know what you're talking about. And so he said we'd be wasting our time to review it. And he said if there's one chance in 100 or one chance in 1,000 that it does have merit, now the anthropologist in a real bind, because if they okay it, or if they announce that it is worthwhile, they are saying in effect that a non-anthropologist has made this breakthrough in human behavior, and that's even worse from an anthropological standpoint to have someone who is not an anthropologist come up with a theory of human behavior.
It's called stepping on toes.
Yes. They all have egos, and they're all dominance-oriented.
Right. I've interviewed, I don't know how many authors, but it's in the hundreds. I've never met one that stops at a single book. You know, book writing's like a drug. It's like crack cocaine. Okay, so what are you up to next?
One of the aspects of dominance and delusion is the concept that we are genetically programmed, many of us are genetically programmed to believe in delusion in order to improve our chances of survival. So my next work, and I'm working on it right now, is something happened 40,000 years ago, and we went from being a very conservative animal human to being a very prolific human, and I believe I know what that is, and I'm doing research right now on prehistoric behavior patterns and looking at different excavations of prehistoric sites that have been excavated and putting together information on where this came from, where this delusional aspect of human behavior came from. We know where dominance came from, and then I'm going to finish it up or follow up with either in the same book or in another book with some of the more delusional belief systems that people have advocated down through the centuries. There's some fascinating stuff that people both for good and for bad. The suicide bombers are delusional. There can be no other rational explanation of their behavior. There's an article in the news today about this 13-year-old boy that's got Hodgkin's lymphoma, and his mother is treating him with vitamins and herbs. That's delusion.
Mm-hmm.
In today's world, we know how to treat Hodgkin's lymphoma, and it's chemotherapy and radiation.
Right.
And so this woman is delusional. So you have it on an individual basis. And if you think about it, here is this woman. She has this son who I am sure is very important to her, and she is going to kill him because of her delusion. So mm-hmm. it is really an interesting aspect of human behavior to see these sort of things happen to the human animal.
The internet has become an important, maybe even vital tool for authors. I presume your website?
I didn't get the question. It was interrupted.
Oh, I'm sorry. The internet has become an important tool for authors. I have a website.
Yes, I do have a website.
Would you like to share it with us?
www.dominanceanddelusion.com. It is simple.
Okay, well, that's pretty easy. Yeah. Where can people pick up a copy of the book?
You can get it through Amazon. You can also order it directly from Ex Libris, which is the on-demand publisher that I'm using. If you go to my website, they will tell you. The website will tell you how to order the book if you want a copy of it.
Okay. One last question, and it's a bit off the wall. I love the cover art. It is simple yet elegant. I mean, it's a wonderful description of the text. You don't need to read the fly leaf. You just look at the cover and you go, oh, I know what this is all about. I mean, who came up with the idea?
Well, that was my design. I designed the cover of the book.
You did? I mean,
yes.
It deserves to be a poster.
Well, I actually do have posters of the cover of the book. I do have part of the package that I bought through Ex Libris was posters for book signings.
Oh, I mean, it is so splendid.
Thank you very much.
I mean, it's simple, but as a reviewer, I read a gazillion books. I listen to a gazillion CDs. I watch more DVDs than should be allowed. And just occasionally, something leaps out and grabs you, and this is one of those that leaps out and grabs you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Oh, it really does. So I want to encourage everyone that's listening in and will listen in the future, because this is a recorded show as well. Go and grab a copy of this very fine book. I mean, it makes for wonderful reading. I took it outside because I like to read outside on the porch. Picked it up, mulled over the cover, plowed into it, and didn't leave my chair until I'd hit the back cover. Mark, I really want to thank you for talking to me today, and I do wish you great success with this book. I mean, it is so well written, and it's so thought-provoking. Everyone should read it, particularly those people living in the Bible Belt.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Mark, it's been a pleasure, and I do hope that we can talk in the future. I'll look forward to your next literary work.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Mark. Have
Thank
a great
you very
day.
Much. Mm-hmm.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.